I brought my own computer in today, so sometimes that's a scary thing. But anyway, as this is turning on, hopefully... Oh, good. It worked. Now you guys know the name of my lesson. I wasn't ready for that yet. It fell asleep earlier, and I had to turn it back on. I'd like to thank everybody for giving me the opportunity to come preach this morning. I always get really excited about this, and I start writing notes down about what I'm going to prepare and what I'm going to give a lesson on. And I started writing down lesson ideas, and I started formulating things on a piece of paper. And I have a whiteboard at my office at home, and it's covered in notes and all these things. And then it ended up going to be on the priest, and that's not what I originally had thought to do. That's not really what I had written down. That's not really what my process thought flow was. But whenever I prepare a lesson, I sit down, you spend a lot of time thinking and preparing of things. But I want to mention just a few things that I wrote down in my notes that I'm actually going to touch on, but we're not going to have time for me to touch on all of these pieces. So I actually started trying to put together a timeline that would involve Ezra, Nehemiah, and Esther, talk about the locations, what was going on in that time frame, the history of the Old Testament. I was going to talk about sacrificing land and property rights, the years of Jubilee, who brought them together, who destroyed them, the people of the time frame, how many times was Jerusalem destroyed? How many times was the temple destroyed? Where were the locations? And who could be priests? So then I ended on my last one. I was like, wow. Because I started thinking and putting stuff together, we would be here till midnight if I would stick with what I had put together. So I hope that everything I put together should flow. I do have two lessons today, so hopefully it should flow to the next lesson. But sometimes when things make sense to me, it doesn't necessarily make sense to everybody else. So I hope that everything I put together can have a good flow so we can think of these things. So I do have a backup. I have my paper copies in case this didn't work, but I'm glad it worked because I have a lot of pictures today. And that's always, kind of helps things flow a little bit. Because I want to start off by talking about the area and the location of where we're talking about today. Because, like I mentioned, I'm going to be talking about the priests and who they could be. But really, I kind of have to talk about how they got there in this section of this area. Now, I love maps and map studies, so I thought I would just show this today. This is just a shot I took in Google Earth. The area that we're talking about today is just this little area. It's just this little section of what we're going to be talking about. But I like this picture a lot of the earth here, because if we look at this, and we know a lot of things happened in this area from our studies, and if we look at the size of this area, because we have Spain over here to the side, and we know that Paul wanted to travel to Spain, but if we look at this area, this is about the size the United States could fit in this block. So if we look at the size of this area, right, so we have Egypt down here, just imagine the size of the desert right here, and if we drop the United States, it would literally fit right in the middle of that. So that kind of gives us a little bit of perspective of what we're talking about. However, the area that we're talking about is about the size of Illinois. It's about the size of one of our states could fit right here inside the land of Canaan. So I am going to be talking a little bit about the land of Canaan, but I wanted to talk about the priest and kind of how we came to this area and why Jerusalem is the center of power and focus. That's going to be a lot of the next lesson. So let's just kind of think about this area. Kind of have the map. We talked about the Dead Sea this morning, so we can kind of see where the Dead Sea is. We have the Sea of Galilee up here. And we just kind of have some of the mountains and some of the areas that I kind of laid out. So when we look at this area, we know that the priests had specific duties, and they had to come from specific tribes. Now, I do want to look at this because this land was going to be an inheritance for Abraham and his seed. So I'm going through about 3,000 years worth of history very quickly. So we have Abraham. However, Abraham was not able to see them actually get the promised land. He passed through it, but he never actually saw them take power of the promised land. So with that, God did promise everything to Abraham that his seed would inherit the promised land. Now, that's in Genesis 12, 1 through 7. But we know that Abraham and Isaac didn't live to see it. So you know, we had times of captivity through this time frame. We have them in Egypt in this time frame. It was actually Jacob's offspring that were to see this land. So that comes from Genesis 29, 21 through 35, 30, 17 through 18, 41, 50 through 52, and 49, 1 through 34. We actually get the family line of Jacob. So instead of trying to go through, and this yet again could be an entire study itself, I did this. This hopefully is a little bit easier because that has got everybody that was mentioned in all of those verses and the timeline that they came from and who they came from. So when we look at this, we can see we have Jacob's family and we have all of these names down through here of what tribes they would have came from. So we have all of the descendants of Jacob. We can kind of see where the tribes are laid out. we have the names of our tribes. And then during this time that they're wandering in the wilderness, we have our tribe names. And then we have the tabernacle. And of course, around the tabernacle, we have all of those names of all of the tribes. Where were they to be around the tabernacle? Now, kind of this a little quickly because I feel like I had to bring us up to speed a little bit so we can actually get here to talk about the tabernacle and the priests. So, we have all of our tribes, where they were to be, where they were to be laid out. Now we see that the Levite tribe's not in here because they were the one to take care of the tabernacle. We kind of mentioned about that this morning and about the importance here of the tabernacle. Because with the flow of the lesson, I'm going to talk about the tabernacle and as it turns into the temple and the importance of where it is and God's importance to the temple. But before they built the temple and everything about that, we had to start with the tabernacle. So with the tabernacle, this is what it could have possibly have looked like. Of course, we have the courtyard, we have the entrance, the altar, you know, all of the pieces inside of it. I have all of these. If anybody's interested in any of these slides, I have all these maps laid out of everything that's inside of this area. But this is made of what it would have looked like while they were traveling around. This is a model built to scale out and about the area that would have been the wilderness of Zin. We had talked about that in a class that I led once about what this would have looked like, where they would have been wandering for years. It would have been this area. And this is kind of a representation, and this is a picture, clearly, because there's electric ran to it right here. This is not something, this is trying to be historically accurate, but it looks like there is electric ran to it right there. So this is kind of our tabernacle, but let's look at the idea here of what a tabernacle is. So this is something that I've kind of learned just by researching this, is that our tabernacle is a fixed or movable habitance, typically of light construction. That's the name of tabernacle. And I didn't realize that maybe when they converted the word, that it actually meant to ancient Rome that it was a religious structure, kind of like in the definition of this. So a tabernacle just itself means that it's a movable inhabitants of light construction. But it looks like maybe when the words were converted into English, that it was converted to this because it was believed that the Romans language used it for religious or ritual structure. Kind of give us an idea of the tabernacle. Now, there was a lot of things that happened with their tabernacle. I have, like I mentioned, we wouldn't have enough time to cover all of the things that I was trying to put together. So I kind of went through a few of these chapters to give an idea of the things that made up our tabernacle. And showed that picture of all of those pieces. So we have the ark was in there. They had the 10 commandments on the tablets and the showbread. We also had in Exodus 26, the tabernacles, the bars, and the partitions. And we had the altar and the enclosure and the oil. We had all of these things that made up our tabernacle. All of these important things that had to be in this tabernacle for the priests to do what they were set to do. So with this tabernacle, we know that the only people that could go in there were the priests. So hopefully I brought us up to this priests. Now, the question might be is who are the priests? So who were these people that were considered the priests. So I just have some things outlining who these people were. So of our priests were here in Exodus 28, I think we get the best example. It says, "Now take Aaron your brother and his sons with him from among the children of Israel, that they may minister to me as priests. Aaron and Aaron's sons, Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar." So we have these sons, and these were the only people that were allowed to be priests. Now, I hope that some of this kind of lines up with what we're studying on Wednesday night, where we think about when everything was destroyed, and then they didn't do what God wanted them to do, and they came back together, and Nehemiah was upset that everything wasn't working the way that it should be. It was because this line was kind of messed with a little bit. Because we know who these priests are. And there was some qualifications. Not only was the qualifications that you had to be a descendant of Aaron, but there was a whole lot of other qualifications that came with it. So they had to be male. They must be a descendant of Aaron. They had to be between the ages of 30 and 50. They had to be unblemished. There's a whole list of things that they considered unblemished through these chapters right here. Also, you had to have a proper marriage. You must have no uncleanliness. And you can't shave, you'd have to have long hair. All of these things made up this area. And you must be properly dressed. There was all of these specific things that they had to follow. And yet again, I hope that I'm kind of making a connection today of all of the things that the priests had to do just to conduct worship, or they had to conduct their daily lives through all of these avenues. Now, just to be a priest, you had to follow all of these sections. Now, the last part that I have is properly dressed. So when we talk about properly dressed, we talk about the priestly garments. Now, here in Exodus 28, we have very specific instructions of what the priests were to wear. So here in Exodus 28, starting in verse 2, it says, "And you shall make holy garments for Aaron, your brother, for glory and for beauty. So you shall speak to all who are gratified, artisans, and I have filled with the spirit of wisdom, that they may make Aaron's garments to consecrate him, and that he may minister to me as priests." Okay? So we know that God kind of gave these people spirit of wisdom to help make these garments. So when we talk about these garments, we had brought up a few things the other day in class. We talked about the Urim and the Thummim pieces, and that gets to be a whole study in itself. But I did want to talk about some of the importance of these garments. Now, with this, we have the ephod. So with that, continuing on in Exodus 28, in verse 5, it says, "They shall take a gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread of fine linen, and they shall make the ephod of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread and fine woven linen, artistically woven. It shall have two shoulder straps joined at its two edges, and so it shall be joined together. And the intricately woven band of the ephod, which is on it, shall be the same workmanship made of gold, blue, purple, and scarlet thread, and a fine woven linen. Then you should take two oxen stones and engrave on them the names of the sons of Israel." Now, I think, some people believe that I think that's the Urim and the Thummim section. But to continue with this dress, here in verse 10 it says, "Six of the names of the stones and the six names on the other stones in order of their birth, with the work of the engravers in stone, and like the engraving of a singlet, you shall engrave the two stones with the names of the sons of Israel, and you shall set them in the settings of gold. And you shall put them two stones in the shoulders of the ephod and the memorial stones for the sons of Israel. So Aaron shall bear their names before the Lord on his two shoulders as a memorial. And you shall also make settings of gold, and you shall make two chains of pure gold like braided cords and fasten the braided chains to the settings." I don't know about you, but at this point, if I was making this, I'd be like, what? What am I putting together? What does this look like? But this is very specifically laid out for exactly what God wanted them to wear. I mean, this is just what they wanted them to wear. And we have a whole other list of things, how they were to conduct themselves and what they were to perform. So this has always interested me about the priests and this breastplate. So I kind of already read through it. It kind of continues there in Exodus 28. It continues on and on about the breastplate, how it's to be made, how it's to be formed, what it's to be used for, what it stands for. There is a lot of things out there that we can study about this specific thing. And this is just of what the priests are to follow. So this is something that it might look like. These are just some renderings of what people believe that this looks like. And I've seen multiple things, because some people have the two amulets on the sides and some of them have them on the shoulders. So there's a lot of different pieces. This one was actually trying to do like the Uman and the Thuman, trying to give that idea with the breastplate of what the priest would have. So there is a lot of intricate pieces with this. There's a lot of specialty things you had to do, and yet again, this only belonged to the priests, and you had to be from Aaron of the Levite tribe. So not only do we have all of these specific things that we should wear, that we should follow, and that we are supposed to have as priests, there's also another set of things. We have the duties of the priests and Levites. Now, these duties consist of the work. Now, I am covering several different chapters in this section, so I'm covering Deuteronomy, Leviticus, Exodus, just to get some idea of what the priests were to do. So, of course, the priests were to teach the people, serve as judges, offer sacrifices, assess impurities, burn incense, bless the people, keep the tabernacle, take care of the altar, prepare a holy things for each day's journey, continue the sacrifice, and blow the trumpets. Right? So we have a specific list of all of the things that they were to keep track of, to take care of. Now, we also know with the tabernacle, they had to prepare it, to take it down, to move it to different locations. Right? So this was a part of what they did. So imagine trying to take this apart for every time that you traveled. Right, to take it apart, certain people had certain tasks that they had to do in order to move it to a new location. Now, to kind of skip ahead a few years, after they have found the promised land, we have the same tribes laid out, but now they have land that's been assigned to them. They have land that is set up for them to be in. And of course, this is of the Canaan area. So with this, we start to see where they have a temple now. Because now we have Jerusalem. And I'm going to get into more detail on this in the second lesson. We do have the city of David. We have the expansion here. I believe this is the expansion of Solomon. So now we actually have a temple up here. After they've done all that traveling and everything with the other one, so we still have this temple, but it's still the role of the priests to still go throughout their daily functions of the temple. And yet, why would we need to go to this temple? Well, we would need to go there to have offerings. Now, I kind of broke down these offerings. So we have burnt offerings, grain offerings, peace offerings, sin offerings, trespass offerings, and there are more of these offerings. Except some of them were special offerings at certain times. So let's just touch on some of these real quick. Let's take, for instance, the burnt offering. So I kind of have the element and the purposes. So we have a burnt offering, and like we talked about this morning, that everything had to be seasoned with salt. So with each of these offerings and these elements and these purposes, of course, this was a voluntary act of worship. The burnt offering. And then we have our grain offering, was a voluntary act of worship as well. We also have our peace offering. This is thanksgiving and fellowship. Of course, we have the biggest one, our sin offering. We have all of these different elements and these different purposes. This is the one that I just had the most elements in here. So, of course, we have this mandatory atonement for specific sin that were all to be carried out by the priest. Now, we also had the trespass offering. So we have mandatory atonement, all of these things that we have set up. So I kind of went through this, fairly quickly. And we started with priests. We have time frames. We have locations. We have the tabernacle. We have the temple. We have the priests, what they were to do. Why we would need to go to the priest or the temple. And now the question is do we need this anymore? Do we need this act anymore? Right, this is something that went on for a long time in Jewish law. Is there a need for us to travel to Jerusalem? Is there any purpose in that? God was very specific in setting up all of these pieces. I mean, even the priest, as I read about, had all of these specific things that he had to wear, that he had to show. So, of course, the answer is no. We don't need any of that today. Because in the second lesson, I'm going to discuss the rise and fall of Jerusalem and why we don't need those things, but why we needed to learn about those things. For the importance of the second lesson. With that said, Glenn, I'd like to turn it over to you so we can sing a song of encouragement. And I want to continue with this idea of the temple. What do we need to do and why we don't need to have these sacrifices anymore? Thank you.